Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Huff, with co-host Chase Palmieri. On today's program, the United States of Propaganda. From the German Marshall Fund to CNN, over to Facebook and the Atlantic Council, corporate and state media censorship is alive and well in our digital age. We'll be joined today for the hour by Kevin Gostola of Shadowproof.com. Stay tuned to learn more.
Created by the criminal minds, political ties, habitualized alibis, disguise under the guise of democracy, politics, and the apocalypse. Got the skies looking ominous.
Welcome to the Project Censored Show. I am your co-host, Mickey Huff, along with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we're going to be spending the hour, well, looking at a new wave of online digital censorship, social media censorship. But in this particular case, it connects right back to the traditional corporate media. Our first guest is Kevin Gostola. Kevin is one of the driving forces behind Shadowproof.com. And Kevin, of course, has been on the program before. He's managing editor over at Shadowproof. He also produces and co-hosts the weekly podcast Unauthorized Disclosure with Rania Kalek. And it just so happens, Kevin Gostola, that we're going to be talking about an incident that involved Rania Kalek, involved a company called Mafic Media, but it also involves CNN and Facebook. So, Kevin Gostola, first things first, welcome back to the Project Censored Show.
Thank you for having me again.
Absolutely. You did an article February 27th that is a follow-up to another article that you'd done. So I suppose we should start with the first of those, was I believe February 16th.
The title on Shadowproof.com is How CNN Led Facebook to Censor Pages of Russia-Backed Video Company and Manufactured News Story.
So that's a mouthful that you then followed up on the 27th and had the CNN correspondent's McCarthyist interview with Rania Kalek and Mafic Media's COO. So there's a lot to unpack here. So we're whetting the audience's appetite as we roll into this. So Kevin Gostola, introduce this fiasco to us.
The best way to do it, and I'll be very basic, and then I'll let you lead me in whatever direction you'd like to go specifically. But generally, for those who aren't familiar with Rania Kalek, you know, she's a journalist who has been doing work in journalism for at least a decade, if not longer. And she used to be a very prominent progressive journalist in the sense that she could be published by The Nation or any other magazine, really. And she's been just relentless and unflinching in her pursuit of truth when it involves wars in the Middle East, covering Venezuela currently, and also being willing to take whatever job she needs in order to produce this kind of strong journalism. And so faced with this attack on her, she faced censorship basically because her belief for the Syrian war is that, and I think this is an important preamble to how she ends up being employed by a Russian state-funded media outfit, so that's why I'm providing it, is she was attacked relentlessly and smeared as some kind of an Assadist because she went to Syria to actually report on what was happening there. And so she's unpublishable, and she got forced out from the Electronic Intifada. She was working there doing coverage of Palestine and Israel, and had done that for a number of years and was an editor, and ended up having to resign because people who didn't like her journalism on Syria. And so, you know, where do you turn? You have to have a job as a journalist. So she went and got a job with this outfit called In the Now. The parent company is Mafic Media. You'll probably hear me say that a lot because she did an interview with Mafic Media Chief Operating Officer J. Ray Sparks and was interviewed by CNN in Berlin. This company, Mafic Media, is registered and based in Berlin, Germany. It does not have any sort of base in the United States. However, some people have worked for it as contractors from the United States. So this is funded, and all of this information was shared with CNN very upfront. We'll just lay this out right now. The parent company of Mafic is Ruptly, which is part of RT. So we're talking about Russia today. RT is a subsidiary of Ano TV Novosti in Moscow. This is the umbrella nonprofit media organization that's entirely funded by the Russian government. And they claim that there's no editorial structure coming from any corporate structure. So the editorial control in the now is 100% with the CEO, and her name is Anissa Nowe. And she's almost about the same age as Ronnie Kalik. These are both very young journalists.
So, Kevin, on a very high level, this story isn't anything new. It's Facebook censoring a media organization or a Facebook page that is critical of U.S. empire. But when you zoom in, it's where the story gets really interesting, which is how CNN kind of pushed Facebook to censor this page called In the Now that Ronnie Kalik is one of the leading voices on. But when you go even further, we've come up with this information that the German Marshall Fund was involved in pushing CNN to then push Facebook to do this. So can you take us all the way back to the beginning of this crazy rabbit hole?
To second what Chase said, Kevin Gostola, if you could walk us through, how is it that CNN ended up looking for this story and then actually created the story in order to create censorship?
Why did In the Now become a target of CNN? And I think that generically speaking, it's because they are doing wall-to-wall coverage of the Russia investigation, and this kind of story serves their agenda. It helps what they're doing on a regular basis. To be clear, we're talking about CNN, that they would want to produce a story. So the headline for the CNN story was Russia is backing a viral video company aimed at American millennials. That sounds like almost every other report you've had on CNN since President Donald Trump was elected. And so what they did is someone who was a contractor or had some link to this company, Mafic Media, said something to CNN. So they started looking and they were trying to dig up dirt. And they really weren't behaving any differently than maybe agents would have behaved when they were under the auspices of J. Edgar Hoover and the FBI, because they just went around trying to knock on the doors of former contractors that had helped on projects. They were contacted a camera person who had worked with Ronnie and significantly lied and said to this camera operator that, hey, we've talked to Ronnie and we're doing this story, and what can you tell us about Mafic Media? What can you tell us about how it's influenced by the Russian government? Can you tell us about its editorial focus and the stories and any dirt you can give us on how it works? And it was a lie, because at this point, and this was early February, at this point, nobody had been contacted as far as like Ronnie or even people who run Mafic Media. And so they sent an email out to the CNN reporters, Kurt Devine and Donnie O'Sullivan. And this went out on February 5th. And the email was shared in a press release that Mafic Media released. That's why I'm able to tell this to you. And it particularly shared facts, the facts that I opened up with about its funding, shared those facts with CNN, not hiding anything, spoke about the people that it could make available to CNN for an interview, mentioning that Ronnie and Anissa could speak to CNN if they wanted. So they granted access to these people, and then it came to be on February 11th. They had the interview in Berlin. Ronnie actually left Lebanon to go to Berlin to do this interview. And then after that was done, we can get into the interview specifically, but just to lay out the timeline, you have CNN contacting Facebook on February 13th. So essentially, it's my contention, it is conjecture, but I think there's strong basis and evidence here, that come February 13th, they did not believe that they had gotten a good enough story. And so they elevated it and decided to get Facebook involved and to bring it to their attention and say that, you know, we talked to this German Marshall Fund, which receives U.S. funding, and one of their fellows thinks that it's wrong that state-funded media, particularly Russian-funded media, don't have to disclose their funding on Facebook, don't have to post their ownership details. And Facebook didn't do anything that day, but they said that they were contemplating doing something about labeling state-funded media, according to Donny O'Sullivan, a CNN reporter. And then 2 days later, again, CNN has not published their report yet on this viral video company. They have not put out the video segment with Rania and this Mafic COO. His name is J. Ray Sparks. They sat on it. They told In the Nabs they were going to wait. They weren't going to put it out yet. And then when Facebook was ready to take action on February 15th, this was the end of the week. This is on a Friday. They went up Friday evening with their video report and a print story that allowed them to basically celebrate or basically mark their story with this sort of achievement that they had gotten In the Now and all of its Facebook pages censored so that no longer were they there. No longer could they share what they very clearly believed to be anti-U.S. propaganda.
So, Kevin, in some sense, CNN helped manufacture the story that they wanted to write about this real-life censorship.
Exactly. And Donny O'Sullivan went on Reliable Sources with Brian Stelter on Sunday, and he didn't hide anything about the truth of what In the Now does. He said the content is pretty critical of the U.S. government. True. Critical of the U.S. mainstream media. Yeah. But it's not out of the ordinary necessarily. That's what he said. And so,
well, Kevin, just because it's critical of U.S. policy or critical of U.S. corporate media doesn't automatically equate it with propaganda or make it false. It has to be judged on the merits of fact, right?
Absolutely. But I'm just saying that even their own reporter would say that, like, this wasn't deceitful work that was being published. He said it made, quote, a lot of legitimate arguments, and also that they weren't really trying to hide their Russian ties. And in fact, if you started to Google the pages, you would quickly find that it was owned by the Russian government, or that was receiving funding from the Russian government. So there's nothing going on here that was deceptive. However, what is deceptive is the way in which CNN presented their reporting, because instead of engaging it, because I think the reason why they really wanted to target Rania and the people of In the Now is because it's a competitor to CNN. And there are, I believe when the pages were taken down, Rania Kolik had told me that there were about 30 million unique views, or that they have millions of people who like these pages and share these videos. And it gets quite a lot of traction. It's a competitor to the perspective that CNN puts out, that is state identified with the United States government. And what they really reject is the sort of challenge to their coverage, particularly their coverage, for example, just because it really fits with the timeline here, their coverage of Venezuela is purely propaganda at the moment, and Rania's is not. And one of the most popular videos that was singled out in this reporting was a video that Rania put together for the Soapbox video channel of In the Now. And that was something that Drew Griffin, the reporter who interviewed her and J. Ray Sparks in Berlin, asked about, or was sort of tying it to, because there's this whole thing of, like, this was a Russia narrative that he was saying to her as he asked her about her line and, like, her beliefs and her ideology.
Well, Kevin, it's the case that CNN literally embedded itself in the anti-Maduro protests to report from Venezuela. I mean, they literally even use this terminology, and then they're surprised that they don't get any information that isn't anti-Maduro. We're going to be doing a whole show with Abby Martin again coming up on Venezuela. We did one a couple weeks ago. That's a hot button topic. And again, I'm glad you brought up that issue because CNN has been pretty much State Department propaganda on that issue, whereas Rania's reporting has actually been fairly critical of all of it. But from what I gather and what I've seen of it, it hasn't been factually inaccurate.
And I'd say that none of what you find in the CNN report disputes the facts of. You wouldn't find in this report any sort of thorough accounting of where they claim that in the Now's different channels are incorrect or factually wrong. That might be valuable to us to know if they were exaggerating or inflating something that was important, but that's not the deal here. And in fact, I think your listeners might be interested to know that I pointed this out in my story. Drew Griffin is actually somewhat noteworthy in the sense of this whole Russiagate genre of news media creation that has unfolded over the last couple of years, because he's well known, even though you don't know the name. People might remember this story where he went to the home of a woman in Florida, and he went up to, this is a private citizen, and it was some older woman who had supported Donald Trump's presidential campaign, and she operated the Team Trump Broward County, that was what it was called, Facebook page, and he told her to her face that she was duped by the Russian government into voting for Donald Trump. And she very angrily reacted, I don't go with the Russians. Come on, give me a break. And he continued to basically, you know, shame her for the cameras for CNN. That's just so anti-democratic. Obviously, as much as I loathe Donald Trump, I would never go shame people and say that they were somehow pawns of a foreign government, and that's why they made their decisions. And so this willingness to go this far to promote this Russia phobia that has taken over this country, this panic that has taken over in the last couple of years, Drew Griffin is more than willing to play into it, and you can hear it in the interview. And that's, I think that's what's so astounding, is the way in which we posted this unedited interview that he did with Rania and J. Ray Sparks, and just the way in which his mind works is rather incredible. I mean, some of the things that he asks when you hear these questions.
I'd like to remind listeners that you're tuned to the Project Censored Show. I'm Mickey Helf with Chase Palmieri. We are joined now by journalist Kevin Gostola of Shadowproof.com. And we will continue our conversation about this fascinating and troubling story after this musical break. Stay with us. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I'm your host, Mickey Helf, in studio with Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we're looking at a fascinating story of how CNN led Facebook to censor pages of Russia-backed video companies and manufactured a news story in the process. The journalist breaking the story is Kevin Gostola. managing editor of shadowproof.com. He also produces and co-hosts the weekly podcast Unauthorized Disclosure with journalist Rania Kalek, who we're speaking about. She's actually part of this narrative in this story about CNN getting Facebook to try to censor her work through these sites because of the counter narratives regarding issues surrounding Russia, but also surrounding Venezuela and other U.S. foreign policy stories. Kevin Gostola, before the break, you were going into the problematic nature, in your view, of Drew Griffin at CNN and the kind of interrogating McCarthyite line of inquiry. You wanted to give us some examples?
Yes, these were questions that were asked of Rania. For what it's worth, I'd say she handled it like a pro. For one, he said at one point, it just seems, viewing so many of your posts, Rania, that your views are completely in line with what we're hearing from the Kremlin, especially on Venezuela. Another thing that he brought up was this issue of how the government basically has a record when it comes to press freedom. And so he said, Rania, you talked about how you have 100% control. But, you know, just the fact that Russia is involved in the financing here, and Russia has an unfortunate history with journalists going missing, arrested, worse, how can you actually say to viewers that Mafic is independent of any kind of influence in its reporting from Russia? Which is just sort of staggering, because what he's saying there is that the Russians are going to possibly murder her in Berlin or Lebanon if she doesn't toe some kind of party line for In the Now. The whole time, there's no willingness to accept the claim that Rania is putting forward that she's completely independent. But in fact, she's not the only person who would make such an assertion. Recently on another Unauthorized Disclosure, we had Dan Cohen on, and he's an RT America reporter. And he said on our show, because we got into state-funded media and some of the issues surrounding it, that he has complete editorial control over what he gets to do. And he recently returned from covering what was happening on the Colombia-Venezuela border with the forced aid delivery. And so I just say that, like, what's amazing is this prejudice, this really flawed understanding of how state-sponsored media, or what we're really talking about is publicly funded media, the way in which it works. The fact that the only way these establishment journalists think is in this, like, sort of anti-communist mindset, this Cold War mindset of, like, if it's media that's funded by the government, it must be used to, like, weaponize and further some nefarious or villainous cause. I don't know if they recognize it, but we have our own ventures as well, as far as the United States goes. There's plenty of this going on. And I just think that rather than censorship, and I believe that you would probably agree with me, what we really need is this media literacy. What we really need, rather than having censorship, is just a recognition that all outlets have their own biases, their own agendas.
We need to see the facts behind the reporting.
Like you're saying, all outlets also are sponsored in some way, either by corporate interests or by state funding. So this is not really new. What's interesting to me about this story is that CNN's fear-mongering about In the Now was brought to Facebook, and that even though In the Now was not breaking any of Facebook's guidelines or terms of service, Facebook removed their page. Now, just to catch up our audience, the page was reinstated 10 days later, and you can correct me if my dates are wrong there, but I believe In the Now was reinstated 10 days later because there was an uproar online. But what was Facebook's statement as to A, why they took them down in the first place, and B, why they were reinstated?
Facebook didn't really give the best justification. They just said that you don't have this information here and you need to put it prominently on the page. And when I believe it was Anissa Nawe, the CEO, who was sort of going back and forth and trying to figure out how they could make their pages live again as they were being deprived revenue to help fund their organization, because, you know, it's basically sort of like 51% Russian funded, 49% she's funding it through her own. So there's some entrepreneurship going on here on the part of In the Now. And so what do we do? And they basically were not responsive. And that's what you find with a lot of these censorship stories. Other people who have been censored, they find it so difficult to get Facebook to respond to you. Part of why it took 10 days is because they were just dragging right. their feet to restore the pages. And I would also just say that I contacted Facebook's press room to try to get some kind of an understanding, because they claim that they have a policy now, something that they're going to enforce for all pages, that's not just going to be exclusive, and that they're going to roll it out. But they still have not announced any formal policy for state-funded media, even if maybe a few pages after this little brouhaha, after everything that happened, maybe some of them have now gone to add some of their things. There's nothing out there that you can find from Facebook. And, you know, I asked Yasha Levine, a journalist, asked for some kind of an explanation from Facebook, and we didn't receive anything. They just ignored our request.
Well, Kevin Gostola, shadowproof.com. Just want to remind listeners, they want to go there and read your work, they can do that at shadowproof.com. But, you know, this reminded me of the Abby Martin interview with Piers Morgan at CNN a number of years ago. And Abby used to be at RT, and she actually wrote about this in the foreword of Censored 2019, Fighting the Fake News Invasion. She wrote about having both autonomy, and she was able to produce the shows she wanted there while she was there. And Piers Morgan, of course, was incredulous that she was working at a Russian-funded media outlet. But when Abby turned it around and shot back at him and said, who funds you? Who funds CNN? I mean, in other words, she took it outside of the problem of just being state-funded media, and it, you know, brings it right back into the propaganda model. You know, ownership, advertising, reliance on elite sources. I mean, these are general critical media literacy questions, and we need to ask them of all sources, as we mentioned earlier, right? So it isn't necessarily nefarious to say, or an insidious guise to just find out who's funding this, who's funding a particular outlet. But because somebody is funding a certain outlet, that doesn't necessarily mean that their reporting is factually compromised. And we need to, again, look very carefully at that reporting. What I wanted to get at was not just then in terms of who's funding, but this is an interesting connection between the corporate media, CNN, working with corporate big tech social media, Facebook. But behind the scenes, CNN was tipped off to Mafic Media, as Chase said earlier in the program, by the German Marshall Fund, which receives money from the U.S. government. And also, Facebook actually still uses the Atlantic Council, a PR arm of NATO, as a fact checker. And of course, the people over at Facebook, the people over the Atlantic Council, Ben Nemo, that you quoted, who was a senior fellow for information defense, basically went along with this. And Nemo said that Kalik boosts Kremlin narratives, and these groups boost Kremlin narratives. You know, in Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting even wrote about this the other day. Jim Narikas wrote about an article called Facebook Wants You to Know If You're Getting Your News from the Wrong Government. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, so this whole thing with the German Marshall Fund is really significant in the sense that it makes it clear that what CNN was doing is really part of a U.S. intelligence agenda. So this German Marshall Fund has a project called the Alliance for Securing Democracy. And its advisory council are basically a who's who of people who would be advancing any sort of national security program that you would probably want to protest. I mean, Michael Chertoff, the former Homeland Security Department chief. You've got Bill Kristol, the board member, who's a board member of the Project for the New American Century, big booster of the invasion of Iraq. You got Rick Ledgett, a former NSA deputy director. Mike McFaul, a former U.S. ambassador to Russia, has big guy to go on CNN anytime that they ask him to hype up Russian influence in United States politics. Mike Morrell, a former acting CIA director. John Podesta, the former chairman of Hillary Clinton's presidential campaign. You got Mike Rogers, a former congressman and chair of the House Intelligence Committee. And you have a former admiral who led European Command. His name's James Stavridis. And then Jake Sullivan, a former national security advisor to Vice President Joe Biden. And this is something I give a nod because I didn't come to this first. Glenn Greenwald, look how there's been this marriage of convenience between these Democrats and these neoconservatives who were so loath during George W. Bush's administration, and now they've come together. And, you know, what I'm leading to is that there's this tracker out there called Hamilton 68 that is really behind a lot of this censorship that I think people have seen on Facebook of pages of people who are engaged in things like Cop Watch and other different citizen initiatives that get pegged as having hallmarks of the way in which the Internet Research Agency trolls operated. So then they get dinged. But the fact is that this Hamilton 68 tracker is not transparent about the way in which it examines hashtags or the way in which it collects information that it deems to be amplifying so-called pro-Russian themes. So let me just be very clear here and summarize this all so quickly. Rania Kallik and J. Ray Sparks and these people at Mavic Media get attacked by CNN because supposedly they're not being open enough and honest. They're accused of being deceptive, but they went to CNN and they provided facts about their funding. But meanwhile, this organization, the German Marshall Fund, that operates this tracker that is shrouded in secrecy to promote censorship, is bolstered by CNN, and they don't have any questions or any sort of investigative journalism on Hamilton 68 to expose the way in which they're manufacturing a panic around social media. The hypocrisy is just so palpable. And I want to conclude with one quick point here that Rania Kallik has made, which is that so often we focus on state-funded media and their bias, but nobody really gets as worked up, at least most Americans, it would seem. You know, they get more worked up about finding out that Russia Today is behind something than they do that AT&T is sponsoring CNN coverage that might be biased, or than they do to find out that maybe the Sinclair Media Group is behind coverage that might be promoting right-wing propaganda. And it's just incredible the double standard that people have arrived at, that somehow corporate bias is less evil than government bias.
Or that it masquerades as objectivity, which is bogus.
And Kevin, the hypocrisy is very clear, and it actually comes full circle because the viral video that Rania Kallik made that maybe set this whole thing into motion was actually, she was making a very powerful comparison to Americans getting fearful or frustrated about supposed Russian meddling while simultaneously cheering on U.S. meddling in Venezuela in such a more direct way with this right-wing coup. So I think that video was so powerful in making that comparison that it's probably what set this whole thing off into motion. And Rania Kallik also, in that full interview that she did with CNN correspondent Drew Griffin that you have on shadowproof.com, she makes it clear towards the end of the interview, she says, look, you can't conflate an anti-war position with a pro-Russian position. Just because I am a left-wing journalist and I am opposed to war and meddling, and just because Russia and other countries in the world might also agree that the U.S. shouldn't intervene in Venezuela, that does not make me somehow aligned with Russia. Those are separate points.
And I would add to what you said that at one point she came back at Drew Griffin, Rania did, and it was on the issue of editorial control. And she very proudly stated, you know, I get to tell the truth about war and corporations, which you don't get to hear much about in corporate outlets like CNN, where people oftentimes even get fired for being anti-war. I'd ask you, where was Mark Lamont Hill's editorial freedom when CNN fired him for telling the truth about the Israeli occupation of Palestine? Mark Lamont Hill does not work for CNN anymore because he spoke openly about Palestine at a UN-sponsored meeting. And the thing that's so cold-blooded about the whole interview is that if you listen to it, Drew Griffin just sticks to the script and very mindlessly goes through the different questions he has without engaging. And as Rania told me, said, it felt like I was being subject to a police interrogation. And so I think that they deserve a lot of credit. They opened themselves up to an attack. They were very transparent. They went forward to CNN and they said, here, you want to talk to us about what we do? You want to educate? You want to help people learn? We'll talk to you. And CNN's, of course, wasn't going to budge from their agenda of putting together an attack piece. And they knew it, but I think they exposed something very important about CNN. But, you know, the reason here about not having so much animosity over Russian media and not promoting so much tension, I think, was made crystal clear by J. Ray Sparks, who described this his past and growing up in the United States versus he now has somebody who's his partner who is from Russia. And, you know, both countries have always been taught to demonize each other's countries, but we're two of the biggest nuclear powers in the world. And one of the things that we have both raised, Ronnie and I, when we talk about this, is this thing of like promoting this war and tension through our media between each other is just so detrimental towards world peace and possibly pushing ourselves to some kind of a point where we do something that is very detrimental to the entire planet, that the sort of things that CNN is doing on a daily basis through its Russiagate and or Russia coverage is really horrible for all of us, in the sense that they seem to be pushing Donald Trump into being more bellicose and belligerent towards Russia, and they seem to want war, and we don't. And this outlet in the now is more about promoting understanding rather than catering to tropes that people here in the establishment media have about Russia. And it's not just about like promoting propaganda. I firmly believe this. It's not just about promoting propaganda. It's about trying to understand each other, because what I came to understand from doing this story is that in the now exists not only to get out Russian talking points. I'm sure that Russia believes it's served by that as well. But the way in which Russia is demonized is so severe and caricaturish at this point that they need their own media to get to other countries so that they can compensate for the level in which we are all disinformed about what is really happening in their country.
Well, interestingly enough, Kevin Gostola, Rene DiResta, who works for New Knowledge, which is one of the companies, one of several that were feeding the Senate Intel Committee in the U.S. about Russian issues, their CEO got caught meddling in the Alabama election with Roy Moore creating Russian bots. Rene DiResta didn't have anything to do with that, but she also works at New Knowledge. But she called this nothing short of an information war. And she basically said that if you're not choosing a side, the side gets chosen for you. And recent polls in the United States have now shown that not only do Americans fear Russia more than they have since the Cold War collapse, so the propaganda seems to be working, right? But that if you look globally, much of the rest of the world has a much more negative view and impression of the United States and sees the United States as far more threatening than other powers. Yet, in the U.S., the same polls showed that the U.S. is completely oblivious to this development. So these seem to be ramifications of an information war and nonstop propaganda.
What happened to Rania, what happened to you in the now, it was a victim of information warfare. And I think that's really the way, the best way to understand what happened. And, you know, Democrats, again, they weren't always this way. In fact, I'd say they were probably outflanked by Republicans in their belief that we needed to fortify Europe and challenge Russia and that we needed to be very contentious. But because, you know, they've managed to nominate, elect a president who feels like he should be much more diplomatic towards Russia for reasons we don't need to get into at this moment, we've seen that Democrats are far more warlike. So people who more closely align with our beliefs and views of the world, unfortunately, have been taken in and have succumbed to, you know, what I'll call, I don't think there's any other word for it, they've succumbed to this Russia phobia. And it's happened to institutions that were actually pretty respectable before Donald Trump was elected.
And again, it's a complicated matter. Information war means there are many sides vying for control of the public mind, as Eddie Bernays would say in his 1928 classic Propaganda. We just want to take a quick break here, and then we want to continue the conversation. I'm Mickey Huff with Chase Palmieri. You're tuned to the Project Censored Show. We'll be back after this musical break. Welcome back to the Project Censored Show. I am your host, Mickey Huff, with co-host Chase Palmieri. On today's program, we've been joined by Kevin Gostola, who is the managing editor of Shadowproof. He produces and co-hosts the weekly podcast Unauthorized Disclosure with Rania Kalek, about whom we've been talking this hour. We're going to keep Kevin Gostola on the line with us to talk about some more social media censorship issues. I just wanted to let everyone know Alex Rubenstein was supposed to join the program, but we're unable to connect at this time. But I did want to call attention to the Mint Press News piece that Rubenstein did. This piece was called How a Small Team of Journalists Overcame Neocon-Cheered Facebook Censorship. CNN manufactured a story. They investigated us, then got Facebook to censor us due to our funding source. And then, boom, they had a story about Russia-funded outlet getting banned by Facebook. And that's In the Now host Rania Kalek that Kevin's been talking about with us on this whole program. And Alex Rubenstein actually goes into a lot of detail. Much of it is similar to what we've been talking about here with Kevin. But Kevin, since we still have you, thank you so much for graciously extending our time. And so, Kevin, before we left for break, we were wrapping that segment, but more of the context. We were leaving it off with more of the historical context as to where we now are. And Chase and I, of course, have done a couple shows already in the last couple of months about the massive Facebook censorship that's going on and the big tech deplatforming and the Google algorithmic spiking and all of these kinds of things, including the 800 pages that were purged from Facebook last year, starting with Alex Jones as the trial balloon that nobody seemed to care about. But then, of course, it went to many, many other sites. And we had Manar Mahawish from Mint Press on talking about it. And then we got into the weeds, too, because we learned more about alleged organizations trying to be somewhat transparent about media literacy ideals. But those organizations have other agendas, like NewsGuard, for example. So, again, all of these things are actually related. So we were talking off air just briefly, and you yourself have done some reporting on these issues of social media censorship. And I know Chase has done some work on this, too. So can you comment on what's going on with that right now? Where are we in the social media purge game?
Well, I think the primary issue is that Facebook, being a corporate entity that is largely unregulated by the U.S. government, the fact is that they get to be the ultimate decider of whether you lose your access to this platform. You know, it's a private thing. Nobody is required to give you or allow you to maintain access. So at any moment, you can be shut out from whatever you've built with this platform. Whatever you are relying on for your income, that can be taken away from you when someone at Facebook decides, as we saw with Rania, to just shut it down or suspend it. And you get lucky, I think, if they're responsive to you and they come back to you with information on how you can restore your pages, because in some cases they've decided that they have looked at your page. What they see is behavior that has similarities to other tactics that have allegedly been used by what they claim are Russian trolls. And so because it matches up with, and there's a similarity, then, okay, your page, we had to flag it and now it's down. And it's basically good luck getting it back up. Back in 2018, it was October, there was this huge purge. They announced that they removed 559 pages and 251 accounts that they claimed had consistently broken rules against spam and so-called coordinated inauthentic behavior. And it's okay if you have no idea what that means, because it's probably like they're just making it up on the fly, as they're making up their policy for state-funded media on the fly. It affected anti-media. They got taken down. It affected the Freethought Project. It affected an RT America correspondence page. It affected multiple pages that were involved in Cop Watch, pages called Police the Police, Filming Cops, Cop Block, and Cop Logic. They called it political spam. They said what they were noticing is that they would go and they would share it between pages, and the way in which they were taking links and they were popping up multiple times, it looked like this could only be done by some page that was being operated by bots. And very clearly, when the New York Times covered this, they said that what Facebook was dealing with were basically pages that had aped so-called Russian schemes in order to deceive people. So there's no real evidence at all that any of these pages that were taken down had Russian involvement. And I'd be surprised to learn that more than, you know, a handful even could be connected to so-called trolls in Russia. But these pages were taken down, and I'd say that probably many of those pages were never able to be restored because Facebook wasn't responsive.
So, Kevin, I know you don't work at In The Now, but it's worth noting that In The Now went from being singled out by Facebook and censored to then reinstated within 10 days. Now, again, I know you don't work there, but do you have any idea what the team at In The Now or Mafic Media did to get themselves reinstated? Meaning, was it simply an outcry of their audience that propelled Facebook to reinstate their page? Or was it some kind of auditing or back and forth information exchange between Mafic Media and Facebook?
I wrote about this because what they were required to add was at the very top of their page, they had to put In The Now is a brand of Mafic, which is owned and operated by Anissa Nawe and Rupley, a subsidiary of RT.
And they're the only page that's ever had to do that, correct?
For this interview, to my knowledge, no other state media was required to put anything on their pages throughout the course of this, you know, I think it's fair to say, scandal, because there was no universal application of this rule. It was the singling out of a media organization that was an easy target.
So, Kevin Gustola, I wanted to get back to the Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting article published March 1, Jim Narikas. Facebook wants you to know if you're getting your news from the wrong government, right? I mean, so he's kind of calling it out here, basically saying that who else is being held to this kind of scrutiny or this kind of standard? And he goes on to say, disclosure is good, but he says, quote, for the goose, but not the gander, apparently. Among the U.S.-funded institutions with Facebook pages are, well, the German Marshall Fund, right? And their description just reads, strengthening transatlantic cooperation. So Jim asks, will that page be taken down until the fund acknowledges where its money comes from? Then he goes on to say, quote, how about the PBS NewsHour, also funded by the U.S. government? No mention of that on Facebook, just, quote, on air and online, the PBS NewsHour provides in-depth analysis of issues that matter to you. NPR's Facebook page seems to go out of its way to conceal the fact that it's U.S. government-supported, calling itself, quote, a privately supported, not-for-profit membership organization. And then Narikas jokes, maybe the P stands for private in NPR. I want to continue here because Narikas' article is, you know, it really hits this point home, what you and Chase were just talking about. He says, quote, even straightforward propaganda outlets of the U.S. government don't have to identify themselves on Facebook. Take Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, set up at the height of the Cold War to broadcast the U.S. government's version of reality behind the Iron Curtain and still going strong almost 70 years later. He says its about page on Facebook reads, quote, uncensored news, responsible and open debate, specialized coverage of Russia, Ukraine, Central Asia, Iran, Balkans, South Asia, Eastern Europe. For those of you who go the extra mile and click on See More under Who We Are, you do get this misleading semi-acknowledgement. RFERL is registered with the IRS as a private, nonprofit security 501c3 corporation and is funded by a grant from the U.S. Congress through the United States Agency for Global Media as a private grantee. RFERL's editorial independence is protected by U.S. law. Our listeners, I'm hoping, will go and read Jim Narikas' piece. It goes on. There's more here. But it's, again, it's calling out this pretty amazing double standard. He concludes it by saying Facebook needs to have one rule for whether government-funded outlets need to disclose their connections, and it needs to apply that rule consistently. Would you agree, Kevin Gustola?
Yeah, I think it absolutely must be consistent. And one of the things that's really hard to discern is because, you know, our propaganda that we put out, the U.S.-funded propaganda that is out there, is going to be translated into other languages. So there's actually a news media network that is set up. It's an operation that's set up in Crimea right now. And of course, they're targeting and going after Russia. And like, I couldn't use the translator and figure out what kind of disclosure they have, but I'm sure that they would not want people to know that they were in fact the ones putting those messages out there into that country, especially because that would be seen as trying to stir up tension within these countries. But that's really the point, is that it's out there like that. And I add to our conversation, because we're having a really good one about state-funded media here, is that the New York Times recently published a piece on February 28th, and it's going to sound exactly like the script that played out with CNN's report. The headline was, "Live from America's Capital, a TV station run by China's Communist Party. CGTN America, which is based in Washington and available in 30 million United States households, insists it does not do Beijing's bidding. Some people are skeptical." And so, you know, like, this is a very shallow way of treating the global media ecosystem that exists around us, to me. I mean, I just don't think that, like, it really gets at the truth of what people are consuming. And of course, the whole focus is to delegitimize any sort of messaging that is out there that runs counter to the United States empire. And I mean, I think that's what really needs to be honed in on here as we get closer to the tail end of our conversation, is that the reason why Facebook is going to continue to have so much trouble to do this right is because what they are targeting is examples and projects that are basically dissident journalism or examples of dissident activism that are fostered and that are strengthened by the fact that they're able to access many people on Facebook. So Facebook actually labels what they consider to be bad content, quote unquote, bad content. And I watched this video when I was doing my report, and they say that bad content is either false news or hate speech or spam or graphic violence or clickbait or links to low quality web experiences, aka ad farms. One of the reasons why that last one actually is a problem for them to be censoring, I think, is because pages like the Free Thought Project or other like low budget citizen journalist sites, they load their pages with a ton of ads because they're trying to pay for their site. And so if that's what they consider to be an ad farm, then you're effectively, you know, even if I don't like the layout of their site, I'm not going to, that's no reason to censor it, because they're really heavily relying on the internet ad system. And some of these sites are doing this, and hey, it's actually Facebook and Google are to blame for the fact that people are overloading their sites with these ads, because they are responsible for why it's been really difficult for sites to generate revenue. They've taken it away. They've made it more difficult for news media organizations to raise funds in ways that were done 10, 15 years ago.
Well, as we know, there's been an onslaught on local journalism. There's been some good news coming here in the last year or so about efforts to rebuild local journalism, and we'll have a whole show on that coming up here in the next month or so. But Kevin Gostola, a good note to end on. You are the managing editor at shadowproof.com. We are going to have to wrap up this segment with apologies to Alex Rubenstein at Mint Press News. We will have him on in the future. And, you know, just one more note to end on, Kevin Gostola. Despite all of the things that we're saying, it isn't that Russia isn't a part of the information war. It isn't that there isn't evidence that they attempted to meddle in the 2016 election. It isn't the case that Putin and his oligarchic allies, it's not that they're innocent of doing problematic things. And from what we already know, in some of the hype surrounding the Mueller investigation, soon perhaps to be public, there's a lot of people around Trump that were doing some pretty shady things, and there are going to be some convictions, right? And already have been. So again, this is why I said it's difficult to sort of get into the weeds on some of this stuff, because we have these binaries at each end where it's not Russia at all or it's Russia's everywhere. So I appreciate your time and your nuance kind of getting into that with us and trying to help us understand this otherwise complicated issue.
Well, thank you for having me.
Yeah, you're very, very welcome. Kevin Gostola, shadowproof.com. We'll certainly be checking in with you, and we'll see if there's any updates on this story in the near future. Thanks, Kevin.
We want a liberated land supporting human conditions, not free market propaganda and corrupt politicians. Cause they own by special interest groups that fund their campaign. That's why you hear the same old things they claim, but change never came. It's a dirty game maintained by rain for capital gain.
You've been listening to the Project Censored Show, established in 2010 by Mickey Huff and Peter Phillips. Mickey Huff is executive producer and host of the program with myself, co-host Chase Palmieri. Anthony Fest is our senior producer, and Dennis Murphy is our associate producer. The Project Censored Show airs on over 40 stations around the United States, from Maui to New York. To learn more about our work or to find any of our previous archived programs, go to projectcensored.org. Please follow and like us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And be sure to subscribe to the official Project Censored Show on your cell phone's podcast app. Feel free to share your feedback about our work. And last but not least, thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Politics of the apocalypse, got the skies looking ominous. So the ocean burned bright with waves full of poison. Genocide wars fought for little boys, and the weapons manufactured paid for by attacks upon the bridges and the levees and the mines collapsing. All the prisons build the capacity citizens. In the times for the master thief, combine and conquer, steal a masterpiece. Open your eyes and realize what's happening. Time's running out to reach all potential. If you ain't at the table, then you're probably on the menu. We got that love.